You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We'll have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Hello and welcome. And it wouldn't be a true podcast unless there wasn't a technical difficulty. So my intro that is usually supposed to go after this decided to pop in before this. So, oh, gotta love moments like that. All right. This week, we are going to be talking with Chris Guyman. He started the Conflict Resolution Center approximately 6 years ago. It quickly became one of the top family law firms in northern Utah. He also was able to do this while only working 3 to 4 days a week and was bringing in $500,000 a year, which working in family law can be challenging. In building his practice, he realized that he loved the business side of owning the firm more, and he especially loved helping other attorneys build their practices. Specifically, although he'd been successful financially, he realized he could help attorneys free up their time and then go out and make more money, spend more time with their families, and prevent burnout or do whatever it is that they love to do. With that in mind, he started his own coaching business, Time Freedom for Lawyers, where he empowers attorneys to define and achieve their definition of success so they might have joy. Welcome, Chris.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to have you on here. So, like, one of the things is, as an attorney, I have an abundance of attorneys that I have access to, right? Like, we're all in a big club, so to speak.
Yeah.
But a lot of these principles that people teach are not unique to the legal industry. Some of them, I would argue, it's harder to be an attorney than a general entrepreneur simply because of the restrictions and professional rules of conduct and all sorts of stuff that we have to abide by as attorneys that you don't have to as a, I don't want to say regular entrepreneur, but as someone who doesn't have the same rules. Let's dive right in. Talk to me about what exactly does that mean when you talk about finding a definition of success and work-life balance, that type of thing. What specifically can you tell me?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I realized was that we all define success differently. You know, for me, it is really spending time with my family and those types of things. I also quite enjoy the occasional video game, which I sometimes don't admit, but I'll do it here. You know, for other people, it's quite different, whether that's money or other aspects. And in order to really be successful, I think you need to understand what that is. And so that was kind of like the entire foundation of why I started coaching and helping people was first helping them realize what it is they actually want. And sometimes we say we want things like world peace or whatever that might be, because it sounds like the right thing to say. But really getting down to people's core, and it's okay. If your mission is to, you know, travel to Mars, then that's fine. If that's what starts Tesla, then great. It's an interesting, not my vision, but, if that's what you want, then great. And as long as you're impassioned for it, you're going to then have the motivation and the energy to do the things that it takes to get you there.
Yeah, I think you touched on a couple of things, like having your own definition of success, right? Like not getting caught in the stereotypical, oh, I have to have private jets and Lamborghinis and things of that nature that is very showy, but largely unfulfilling, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good fast car. I used to own several in my time. But
yes.
At the same time, you know, it didn't leave me a better person. It left me a broker person. And so I think defining your own success, how do you know if you don't define it, how do you reach that goal, right? Like, how do you get there if you don't sit down and define it? So in your coaching business, what exactly do you do? Like, I mean, sit down and write out goals. What is it that helps you not just define, but help people achieve their goals? What gives you that?
Yeah, good question. With the coaching business specifically, I focus on three major aspects of the business. And the first being you personally as the CEO. Especially when working with attorneys, that's a unique phrase for them. You know, they consider themselves an attorney or a partner, but they've never really considered themselves the CEO or the owner of a business.
Right.
And so helping them have that mind shift and what it takes to be a CEO. And the second aspect then being how to actually run a business. Again, we call them law firms, we call them practices, but a lot of people forget that it's a business. And when you run your practice as a business, you can provide higher quality representation than you ever could as just an attorney cranking out work. And then the third thing that we focus on is then generating clients, because no matter how good of an attorney you are or a business owner, no matter how good of a business you have, if you don't have clients, then you're not going to be able to help people. And so that's kind of the third thing we work on.
Okay. And then we were talking before the show started about efficiencies and planning, and you know, the podcast is called Tactical Startup. So what are some tips that you can give that will help my audience think that way, right? Because it's not natural to think. As an entrepreneur, you have to be equal parts creative and equal parts planning, maybe if you feel like it, right? So what is it that you do to help people like think with that intentionality?
Yeah. So the first thing I do, and I like to call it people's motive. Motive is a good legal phrase. And so again, attorneys resonate with it, but whether it's your why or your motive or your goals, we start with that first. And we kind of talked about that already, but I help people really start thinking through things like, what gets you up in the morning? Like, what are you actually excited for? Right. For me, I know that I'm being successful when I have enough time to play video games, but I'm so excited about what I'm working on that I choose to do that instead of play games. Like, that to me is success. Having enough time, but then still working because I love what I'm doing. And so starting there, and then we come down and try to define that in actual action items. Like, if you want to learn a language, for instance, what does that actually mean? Like, if you want to say, I want to speak Chinese, well, does that mean you want to be able to teach a college level class on Chinese, or is it that you just want to be able to have a 5-minute conversation with someone? Because that both means speaking Chinese, but it doesn't necessarily have the same work. So I'll come down and I'll help them break down their goals into shorter term things, maybe 3 or 6 months of, you know, if you want to have pay off your house, well, maybe you can't pay your house off this month, but you could pay $5,000 to the house. And if you did $5,000 every month towards your house, you're going to pay it off a lot faster than if you're only paying, you know, $1,000 or $3,000. And so we help them actually break it down into shorter term goals. And then we try to break it down into the actual action steps it's going to take. So if you want to have $5,000 to put towards your house and you're, you know, selling $1,000 services, then you need 5 additional clients to make that money. And, you know, that's a simple math way of doing it, but I really try to break it down into, okay, if this is your goal, then what are you going to break it down into? What are you going to do today?
Right.
And once you've broken it down into daily steps, you just have to do that and do it over time, and you'll achieve these big goals.
Right. Right. Now, when you say daily steps, like 1,000 things come at me on a regular basis, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll have a client, and then I'll have, I'll have an outside vendor that has issues, and then I'll have to fix this. And you know, it's like I'm a plumber fixing pipes, not an attorney, you know, because it's always about the leaks, right? Things that are that. And so how do you transition from the emergency or the urgent, right? Like, or what appear to be that way? Right. Because it's not always that they're actually emergent, to
to being able to be more proactive and less reactive.
Yeah. You know, your brain thinks the same way mine does, because the next part of the program is really where it comes into that time freedom. And so the next thing I usually talk about is those types of things. And there's really three rules of time that I subscribe to or follow. And the first one is that 80-20 principle, that 20% of your work will produce 80% of the results. This is often called Pareto's law, and you can find it all over the internet. But we spend a lot of time looking at our services and saying, okay, what things are actually generating the results, and trying to cut out the other things that aren't and really focusing on just the things that are. The second rule being Parkinson's law, that something will take as much time as you give it. And so whether that's you have a month to draft a motion, or if you have a week to draft a motion, or even a day, if you have a month to draft something, you're going to spend a lot more time than if you only have a day. But at the end of the day, more often than not, you can get stuff done in a lot shorter amount of time than you thought you could. And so we use Parkinson's law a lot to limit how much time we spend on certain tasks in the business. Right. And then the third thing is just being intentional, really setting apart times in the day to work on things. Specifically what I like to call deep work. There are tasks like writing a book or research or whatever, those things that really take a lot of energy, mental energy. And it may take 20, 30 minutes to get going on it. And if someone interrupts you, then you've lost 20, 30 minutes of your time to get back into it. Right. So we just schedule times to do those each day, and then let the rest of the things happen. Because you're right, there's always going to be fires. And in fact, right before this podcast started, my assistant walked in and had some questions and, you know, just minor things. And my answer had to be, well, I've got a podcast, I need to get to that. So good luck. Yeah. And let me know how it goes. You know, so sometimes you just have to be willing to let those small bad things happen so you can achieve your goals.
Right, right. So I use the goldfish principle, right?
Okay.
The goldfish, you know, will grow to the size of their tank, right? Like,
yeah,
with some limits. And that's how we are with money, and that's how we are with time, right? We all take up the amount of time that that is allowed us, like you were saying, with the month, or you know, if it takes us a day, if we have a day to do it, it'll take us a day. If it takes us a month, it'll take us a month, right? We fill up that time, and the same thing goes with why most people don't save anything, because they are goldfish with their money, right? Like if you have $10,000, guess what? Most people will spend $10,000, right? Like that's just who they are.
Yeah.
And there are spenders and there are savers and stuff like that. But either way, what happens is most people get raises and they improve their lifestyle. And then they don't get around to saving for the future, because it's like, oh, I can finally breathe. And then the next time they get a raise or they do something better, they, oh, I can breathe again. I can breathe some more and I can enjoy this new thing that I've always wanted. And it just is this cycle. So part of that is that you have to, like, mentally restrict yourself to things that fit, right? Like,
yeah.
if you remain that same size fish in a big, huge tank, you're going to get a whole lot more tank. Versus if you are the small fish that grows into the size of the tank, then whether it be time or money, then you end up with the same crowded tank that you had before. Now, is that always easy? No. Is it harder to do that? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you're going to end up happier because you're happy with your tank, right? You're happy with the time that you're spending in things, and rather than, so if something does take you a month, rather than it taking you a month, set your own artificial deadlines for it to take 2 weeks or, you know, half the day, whatever it may be. So I like the 80-20 principle. Use it. It's so true. And using that to your advantage and the intentionality that goes with it. So what are some things that you recommend to be intentional about your days?
First and foremost is scheduling time for your personal time. It depends on who you are. Attorneys, they suck at time management and taking care of themselves and their family first. So I always say that to them first. If you're not that way, then maybe that's not the case. But most attorneys, they need to, we literally go into their calendar and say, okay, you're not going to work these days and these times.
Right.
So yourself and your family first. The next thing is then working on your business. It's so easy to get wrapped up into putting out the fires and all the things you need to do in the day that you never actually sit down and work on the business, creating systems and those types of things to make it better. So that's the next thing we put in there. The third thing I put in is then deep work, the scheduling time where you can actually get stuff done. You know, as an attorney, like people pay me to draft and file motions and settle their case. And those things take mental energy and work. So right. I schedule time to do that first. And then the rest of the time is set aside. Whatever time's left is set aside for phone calls and emails. And my clients know that too. Like last week, I did not check my email one time. Wow. And they knew that. They knew that, hey, I've got some mediations and stuff. I put an autoresponder on there and said, hey, I'm busy. And so there, you know, I won't get to you until Monday. And it just was what it was. And so allowing those extra little things to fill in the rest, but making sure to dedicate the big stuff first.
Yeah. And I think you bring up an interesting point. Most things are not emergencies, right? There are some time sensitive things.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, and I mean, family law and criminal law are more time sensitive than most other types of practice areas. But I think one of those things is to identify what's urgent and what's emergent, right? Like there's and even then most things aren't actually urgent. There might be an artificial feeling of urgency that goes with those, but the law moves very slow, slow.
60 days if you're lucky.
Yeah. So it doesn't make a ton of sense. It's usually, one of my family used to have this saying on the wall, lack of planning on your part doesn't automatically constitute an emergency on my part. Right.
Yeah.
And we get that a lot. People come to us. Oh, I've got this hearing. I've got this thing that's closing. I've got this, whatever it may be. And sometimes legitimately it's a surprise. Like I've had people legitimately that it's been an issue, but more often than not, they procrastinated the heck out of it. Right. They got the notice on the first, and I'm just using that as a, for instance, they got the notice on the first and they hemmed and hawed about it. And it's due on the 30th, and then they call us on the 25th and saying, I got this notice. I just got it. How long ago? Oh, the first. Okay, well, 25 days is a long time, and you've been sitting on it. And so now all of a sudden they want us, not always, but they want us to drop everything and have a response or figure it out, solve their problem. And so you really have to identify that and say, yes, I understand it's urgent to you, but it's also a self-imposed urgency. It's not it's not actually urgent. And the court generally is like, really, they don't want you there anyway. And so, you know, if they can push you off and push you out, they're more than happy to do that. You know, they say justice delayed is justice denied. Well, yeah, that's fun. But the reality is justice is delayed quite frequently. Anyway, so you've made a switch or you continue to do your family law thing. What's that like?
With family law specifically, and this is a good analysis of the 80-20 principle, I sat down one time and realized that the lion's share of my cases are resolved and finished when the parties go to mediation. And it really doesn't matter how many motions are filed and other things are done. More likely than not, a case ends when they go to mediation, is resolved, right?
Right.
And so I actually sat down one day and said, okay, what is the fastest way to get to mediation? And Utah's unique in the fact that they allow mediators who are also licensed attorneys to draft and file paperwork for their clients. And so I actually set up what I call a pro se mediation. So people can come in without attorneys. They meet with me. We sit down for about 3 to 4 hours. I mediate the case more often than not. We settle, and then I can actually draft and file the paperwork, and they can be done in a matter of weeks. And so that's what most of my practice is now, is those pro se mediations. It's about 4 hours of my time, and the rest of it can be done by my staff. And I can get people in and out in weeks instead of, I think the average in Utah, if I'm remembering right, the average cost of a divorce was between $5,000 and $9,000 each. So $10,000 to $20,000 total. Right. And they were taking on average about 9 to 11 months, some as quick as three. These are closer to $2,000 and they take about 2 to 3 weeks. So it was just taking that 80-20 principle, figuring a way of getting there as quickly as we can, and then getting them out. So that's about 90% of my practice now.
Okay, nice. I'm glad that mediation works for some cases. Found in the civil litigation cases that I do that mediation very rarely works. And I think the key is, and if I'm, my observation is this, is that typically mediation is great when the parties, one, are committed to an outcome, right? They want to, there needs to be a mutually beneficial outcome. That's really what it is. Yeah. And then the other part is if they want to have an ongoing relationship of some sort. But when in civil litigation, the parties could care less about each other. And if they never see the other party again, that's okay. Right. There's nothing to reduce to improve the relationship, even a casual working relationship. Like it's, it's all about the money. I've got a matter right now that I'm working on that they want us to mediate, and it just doesn't make sense. Because it's not a divorce. It's not a relationship, right? Like there's no relationship there, not real, not a real good one anyway. That's interesting. So what, like, as far as like you've started what would appear to be two successful businesses at this point, for people starting out, what in business or in well, not law, because you have to be an attorney to be a lawyer. But in business, what would be your recommendation? Like if they're just getting started, what would you recommend them start to do?
Obviously it's going to depend on the business industry, but I will say a universal principle is going to be, giving yourself more credit than you actually are giving yourself right now. I started working with a business coach myself about 2 years ago, and in working with him, you know, I was doing maybe 20, 30 grand a month in sales at the time, and he was doing like 100 grand a month, and I did not think that was possible, not for an attorney. He was a coach, but whatever. And then I start hanging out with him and these other guys, and there was two twins, and they're like 24 years old, and they're doing like 200 to 250,000 a month combined. So 125 each. I always teased them that they'd use their numbers, but there was two of them. And then there's this, this one kid, he's 19, and, he did $500,000 in 1 month worth of work. Wow. And I was just blown away. I was like, man, these people are just incredible. So I had an opportunity to go hang out with them in California at a convention and learn from each other. And I'm sitting there in the room, and I was like, man, these people are not, they're not any different than I am. Yeah. They've really been willing to allow themselves to have success. And they've done some of these principles when it comes to goals and, repeating their goals to themselves and, being okay with success. And, that was really all it took for me. I set a goal at that meeting that I would do, have $100,000 a month. And I kept telling myself that that was going to happen. I kept telling myself it was going to happen this month. And then I kept trying to think to myself, like, what are things that I can do to get there? And about 4 or 5 months later, I had my first $100,000 month. And I don't do that every month by any means. In fact, some of the things I had to do to get there were not in line with my goal of spending time with my family and whatnot. So I've cut back on some of that stuff, but, it was eye-opening to me that it was possible. Right. Something that never would have been possible because I didn't believe in it became possible just from thinking. There's that book, Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah,
a lot of the principles there, are that I learned in that thing was from that author in that program. So I'd say start there, because that works anywhere. No matter what industry you're in, you can start believing in yourself first, and then you can start creating the action items from there.
So I want to ask, would you say, you know, is it a chicken and egg problem, right? Believing in yourself and then it becoming true, or working towards it and it becoming true? You know what I mean? Like which is it, chicken and egg, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think that if you believe that it's true, you'll then start doing the things that it takes to be true, right? I can't just sit at home and say, I'm going to make $100,000 this month and then keep playing video games all day. Right. And at the end of the month, have $100,000. That's not how it works. That's not, I don't think that's what Napoleon Hill was trying to teach with Think and Grow Rich. But if you want something bad enough and you believe you can achieve it, then you'll start doing the things that it takes to achieve that. I mean, obviously my practice was completely different at $100,000 a month than it was $20,000 or $30,000 a month. So the actions are definitely required to receive the results. But to me, it starts with thinking.
Yeah. I think that's an important part. Like so many, like I get people that'll come to me because I do startup businesses and whatnot. And they'll come to me, I've got this great idea. And they're like, and I want you to do this, all this pro bono work for me for free. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to discount your idea, but if you're not willing to work for it, right? Like if you're not willing to put in the energy, the time, like if you can't get a prototype of the item that you're looking to do, okay, before you even come talk to me, right?
Right.
Like why should I believe in your dream to do the work for something that you don't even believe it in?
Yeah.
Right. Like people will do that. They'll be like, oh, this is a great idea. It's a great invention. And I'm like, I'm not going to debate whether it is or isn't. That's not my decision.
Right.
But you're asking me to donate my time for free. Okay. For something that you won't donate your own time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Nobody in their right mind to do that.
Right. You know, that's a big part of coaching. I had my first coach I hired was $10,000. And I actually signed up for that without talking to my wife first. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of a sticker shock to have to go talk to her about that after. But about 3 or 6 months into that, I had the opportunity to join an elite program for $30,000. And one, it was neat because she was on board. I talked to her before spending that much money, luckily. And there was only like a 5 minute conversation. Yeah. Much better. I'd probably be single if I hadn't, but, but I will say it was that action of investing in myself that was probably the most valuable thing out of that coaching program. I mean, the coach was great. He was an intelligent, great mastermind. That's where I met these, you know, $500,000 a month people. But the mere act of investing in myself and believing that I could do it, but taking that first action, that's what I think I got more value out of than almost anything else.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because, one of my coaches, you know, speaks about, you know, you show commitment via time, via the calendar or your wallet, right? Those are your two options. And it's interesting that the bigger commitment that you put to yourself, right, the more success that you had.
Yeah.
People that put tiny amounts of commitment, tiny, you know, they want everything done free.
Right.
There's no commitment. There's no skin in the game. There's no, you know, people fail not because their idea is bad, right? Like they might have a great idea, but they fail. Their businesses fail because a lot of times they're not committed enough to it. They're looking for, you know, they got one foot out the door into working a job, which if that's not your thing, I'm not dissing jobs, but if you're creating a business, how committed are you to that business, right? Are you $30,000 committed or are you $10,000 committed?
Right.
And are you going to work harder because you just gave up $30,000 or are you going to work harder because you gave up 10?
Right.
Right. Like people that want free, and I'm not, I get it. Sometimes free is what you have to work with. I'm totally understanding of that. You know, in fact, in my podcast that was just went out today, I said, look, if you want something bad enough, you'll find a way to make it happen. Like, yeah. There won't be anything that will stop in your way, but you have to do it. And I said, if you can't, I put this, if you can't afford a notebook to write down your goals and start your action plan, I will send you a notebook, right? Like, yeah. What's that? Maybe $2 for myself and some postage and some pen and just throw it on, like, legit. Like, you don't need, like, I have a bunch of technology, right? Like, what we're on right now. You don't need this to get started. You don't need this other stuff to get started. But eventually, you do, right? You need to invest in yourself $10,000, $30,000, $100,000. Because here's the great thing about what you, and this is what I got out of what you said, and I wanted to kind of expound on this. Once you believed in yourself like that, you started acting like you were that valuable. And that has substantially more value than the money that you spent, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because now you're changing your mindset from, oh, I'm so broke, I can't afford something, right? To how can I not?
Right.
Like, when people come to me and they complain about what I charge for my set up a LLC or a corporation or whatever, you know, I don't apologize for that because I'm doing you a favor.
Yeah.
Because you're investing in your business. You're getting your business done right. You're not doing the DIY. You're not doing the LegalZoom. You're doing it right.
Yep.
And that has more value, right? Because now you're not trapped in this, oh, it was so easy, it was free, I can get out of, you know, it's if it doesn't work out, no big deal.
Yeah.
Right? But once you've got some serious skin in the game, then it's like, oh, no, I got to keep trying at this. I got to keep working. I can't give up. I can't quit just because it's a hard day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to go on that, but I thought you had some great, great wisdom there.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Popped in. So starting a business is hard.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. Anybody that says it's easy and will give you this magic potion is selling something, right? That's just how it is. And I'm not suggesting that you can't get help. Like, absolutely, you should, absolutely. But what are some steps that you would recommend to make it easier? Like, just to take the edge off, right? Because it's already pretty edgy, right? Like, it's a sculpture in progress, right? You got to be able to see the David. You've got to be able to see that in your mind's eye to make it happen. Chisel away the rough parts to get to the smooth part to make what it is the business that you want.
Yeah.
So how can you make that happen, right? How can you chisel that away, make things easier?
Yeah. I mean, if you can find somebody who's done what you want to do and that they'll mentor you, even if it costs money, I would definitely suggest starting there. Cause you're absolutely right. Don't reinvent the wheel if you don't have to, it is going to be hard. However, even if you do have a mentor, you're still going to have to do some things.
Right.
And the first thing, if you have no clients, you're going to have to go get some clients. I like to focus on people's quality of work before I focus on clients. But at the end of the day, if you have no clients, you can't work on your quality of work because you can't test it. And so, like, one of my recent coaching clients, she started out fresh out of school. So she didn't have any clients. She didn't have any networks. She didn't have anything. So the very first thing we did is we helped her start building some relationships where she could get clients. She joined a networking group. We found a kind of a referral thing, but we just started getting some people in the door. And then from day one, we had her start tracking the things that she was doing that worked and didn't work. Because I wanted to be able to start creating systems from day one. Sometimes when we have the time, we're not thinking about doing that. And then by the time we start having success, we don't have the time to work on the systems. And yes. So from day one, she started writing those things down. And 6 months into her business, she was doing $10,000 a week. So she crushed it, but she was way more diligent than I was when I started. So get some people in the door, start building some relationships, but then from day one, start creating systems.
I've thank you. I've actually brought that up to my audience before about systems and the importance of them, because if your business is completely reliant on you, what happens if you are not you, right? Like if you right. die or something happens to you where you can't work, is your business going to survive without you, right? And the right. value of a business, true value, comes from not letting the business become what it is without you, right? That's really the key, is to make sure that if you need to sell your business, that you've built it to the point where that's an asset, as opposed to you have to work it until you die, right?
Yeah.
Like, 'cause you can't afford to do it otherwise. And so building systems equals part of that success, right? Because then all of a sudden somebody else can step in your role and you can step out and you go on your merry way and have an amazing life without having to do the work, because you've yeah. already built those systems. You've already built that, those programs, those things that help push people forward, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's another important part, is to build that system from day one. Like, start writing them down immediately. Like, as you're having ideas and plans and goals and stuff like that, you know, and it can be lots of different things. I don't want people to get hung up on the idea of, oh, it's a lot of work. I mean, it is, but it can yeah. either be writing it down, or it could be doing recording videos, something that I do. I have posted on YouTube lots of different videos for about business. Yep. It can also be screen recording, right? Like, you can walk through your steps of something that you do every day, so that then when you have the money to pass off to a VA, hey, look, you've already got, or an employee, you've already got it already mapped out. The people literally can sit down and go watch the video. Oh, okay, here's how you can do it. And all of a sudden, you have a system in place for something. And now you don't yeah. have to, you do it once, and if it changes, you do it again. But you do it once, you teach it once, and then that allows the other party to do it when you are not there. So tell me.
And I use that same screen capture. I did the same thing. Like, if something comes to me and I need to do it, I hurry and do like a screen capture or something. And then if I have time to write it down, great. If not, I'll often just send that screen capture to my staff and say, hey, put this in the playbook, and I let them write it down. And so, yeah I love that idea.
When did you get a staff? At what point was it like all of a sudden, or did you're like, it was crazy? And then my next question is, how did you hire them? Because I'll tell you something, finding good people to work is challenging. That's one yeah. of the things, like, people, we'll talk about that in a second, but so how did you, you know, when did you do it and how did you do it?
Yeah. So I sign on to that philosophy of eliminate, simplify, automate, and then delegate. So staff would obviously be the delegation side of things. However, a lot of this is trial and error, and you just have to be willing to fail faster. And so as soon as you can afford to hire somebody, I think you should. And if for me, I was living in a commercial, I was living in an apartment building above a commercial building. And so it was $250 a month, and it was my in-law's apartment. So I knew they weren't going to evict me if I, for some reason, couldn't pay the rent. And so I just, it was within about 4 or 5 months that I hired my first paralegal. Wow. That allowed me, you know, to get someone in, and then we started working together, and I would just kind of give her things to do and see if it worked or not. And if it worked, then great. We'd create a system on how to repeat. And if it didn't work, then I'd try to create a system, you know, of elimination or simplifying, so that I didn't have to do it myself. But it's hard
yeah.
to delegate. Like, it's hard to be a boss, and you think it's easy. You're just like, oh, if you have an assistant, then I can just delegate whatever I want and it goes away. Like, getting good at giving commands in a way that people actually follow through is a skill. And so yeah. I'd say the sooner the better. And then practice. If your staff does something wrong, just assume it was your fault and you didn't give them good instructions.
That's so powerful right there. Like, the buck stops here, right? Ultimately, yeah. if you're the boss, you're responsible for it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I think that's another absolutely valuable point, is that you take responsibility for that. You know, so many, I've worked for a lot of different bosses in my time. And, you know, I would make mistakes, as is a human being, human nature. You know, I'm not perfect.
Is everyone, yes.
Right. But, you know, it's a very different attitude. It's your fault. You did it wrong. But what if you didn't communicate it effectively? Right.
Right.
Like, if you didn't explain explicitly what you're looking for and you just expect me to figure it out, well, then I'm going to figure it out differently than what you do because I'm a different flipping human being, right? Like, that's just human 101. We don't see things the exact same way. Like, even with the most simplest of things, you know, everybody sees life just a smidge different. Like, the sky is blue, but, you know, there's clouds there too some days. There's rain, there's snow, there's different things. And so those things, the shape our views. And so as an employer, you have to be willing to adjust your way you communicate so that the other party understands you. Right?
Yep, absolutely.
So I guess because when I've been searching for people to help, like, I've had very mixed results. Like, I will get people that just do a half job, or we're just, they're not motivated. And I'm like, I'm paying you money. Like, I don't know how much, where I can motivate you. I'm not a micromanager. I don't believe in micromanaging. I think it's a waste of time. Why should there be two people doing the same job, or two people doing the same job twice, or whatever? That doesn't take money off. That doesn't take time off my plate, which is what is my most valuable thing. So, how do you find those people, right? Like, what do you use? Upwork, Fiverr? Where do you go to find your people?
And I've done a lot of different things. The first gal I hired was through a employment agency. I had a friend that was working at an agency, so I used that. That was expensive. It was good, but it was expensive. And I've used things like Indeed. Indeed's pretty well used here in Utah, so that's been good. Honestly, though, the best people you find are people that you've built relationships with already. And so, like my current lead paralegal here, she was from the law firm upstairs. Literally right upstairs, and, you know, maintained some relationship with her and worked with her over time, knew she was really good. I'm always fishing to kind of see where people's heads are at. And I knew that she was looking for another job and didn't like some of the things that were going on in that firm. And so, when a position came open, I hired her, and my partner is the same way. I took him to lunch for a couple of years and just always kind of fished to see where his heads is at. And I'm not going to, you know, poach somebody if they're happy with where they're at, but if they're already looking, then they might as well come here. And so that's how I found the best people. What I've been looking for, though, is I'm always trying to hire based off of personality instead of skill set. Right. My worst employees have always been the ones that had the best resumes. And, you know, I hired them because I'm like, wow, look at this resume. Like, she speaks Spanish and she's intelligent. She's got all these marketing skills. Like, she's going to be everything I want. But, and not to say she couldn't have been a good employee, but she didn't fit, our culture and who we wanted, to be here. And, where like my current paralegal, she's been divorced herself. And she is very compassionate about making sure people have dignity in their divorce. And so she'll go to the ends of the earth to make sure our clients feel like they're being heard. And so I would much rather find somebody who shares your same vision. That's why you have to know what your vision is, so you can see if they share it, but shares your same vision. And then you can teach them how to do things, especially if you've been creating systems. Teaching them how to do things is easy. You just got to make sure they're going to be excited to do it.
Lots of wisdom there. Lots of wisdom there. Having cultural fit is more important than skill, right? And that's
absolutely
what I think that's so important, right? Because I mean, like, I'm almost speechless. I say almost because I don't think I've ever been speechless in my life. Heaven knows I can talk. I think that's a different mindset than most of the world, right? Most of the world is looking at, oh, this person has these skills and I'll force them to fit into my culture, right?
Yeah.
Like that's most employers. Most employers are looking at, oh, he can do this, he can draft that, or he or she or whatever can do fill this skill, right? But the problem is if you're only comparing skills, you're not completing the entire picture of that person, right? Because a person might be skilled in one thing, but then there's things that they're that you can't put on a resume, right? Like you can't put whether this person will adopt our company culture or not, right? And that's a better indication of success than whether they're skilled at something, right? Because all things being equal, if the skills are the same between two people, then they're going to go where they feel most comfortable at. And some people are going to feel more comfortable with you, and some people are going to feel more comfortable with other people. And that's a reality. It's just like, it's a lot like marriage, right? Like my wife, and I say this, would probably not like you. I mean, doesn't know you. And your wife would not like me, right? Because we are different people, and that is acceptable, right? Like there's no expectation that two parties that even though we might have similarities, right? We're two men, we're two, you know, I don't have red hair, you do. You know, we have similarities. But as far as like fit is concerned, you know, we're both attorneys. So tangentially, like skill set, we might be similar. But that fit that goes with it, that feeling of this person is someone who I want to spend my time with, this company, right? You know, speaking of which, did you ever watch the We Crashed? With Adam from WeWork.
No, I missed that one.
It's a good video. It's a good series. It's just a single, but it goes over how WeWork started. And their whole thing was based on culture, right? They did some things that weren't kosher, but their whole thing was on culture. Wasn't just about, I mean, they basically came back to, they were a property management company. And that was their big problem, was that they were selling this culture, but all they really were property management. And so I think you have to be both, right? Like you have to sell the culture, but also recognize you're still a law firm, right? Or you're still whatever type of business that you're in. You know, square peg, round hole, round peg, square hole, right? Like you need to fit both. It needs to be a round hole and a round peg. So what, I guess, if you could boil down into one set of wisdom, what wisdom would you want to pass on to somebody that is getting started, that it's like, oh, if only I would have known this in the beginning, how would my life have been better? What would that be for you?
You know, I sign off pretty much everything, all the content I create with, you've got this. Mm-hmm. Because I truly believe that if you're willing to put in the work and not give up, that you will reach your goal. Don't, you know, create your goals and then stick to them. Create plans, execute them. If the plans don't work, create new plans and keep going. Because if you really want something and you're willing to put the effort, you can get it. And then look for mentorship. Seriously, the biggest leaps and bounds in my practice were from paid and free coaches, you know, mentors that had done before what I had done. It's so much easier to call somebody and ask them how to do it than spend countless hours trying to figure it out yourself. So if someone's done it before, ask them before you do the research.
Yeah, I think that's important. My phrase on that one is be firm in your goals, but flexible in your approach.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
Because you're acknowledging that you know, Mike Tyson says everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right?
Yep.
So you really have to acknowledge that that's a lot about being an entrepreneur or being a business owner. Is you can plan all you want to, and that's great, and you should absolutely plan. But inevitably, there's going to be some monkey wrench. There's going to be something that's going to come up that's going to screw your plan up, and you've got to adapt. And it's very Darwinian, right? Like adapt or die. So, you know, have a goal, be firm in that goal, but then, okay, if it didn't work, this way, then let's try it a different way. Let's try going around, like, you know, football analogy. Stop right. running it up the middle, run it around the side, you know, so pass yeah. it in the air, do a fake, do something else if it's not working. And if it is working, keep doing it, right?
Yep. Like, yeah, don't fix something that's not broken. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And don't find a problem waiting for a solution. No, don't find a solution waiting for a problem or something like that where you're like literally your worst enemy, your own worst enemy, right? You're shooting yourself yeah. in the foot unnecessarily. Lots of cliches involved there. I just realized lots of cliches I had.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for coming on. Before we go, I always ask a few fun questions. These aren't anything crazy, but just for my audience to get to know you. And so the first one is, if there was a sandwich named after you, what would it be? What would be on it?
What would be on it? You know, I've been trying to think of this one. I am about as boring as it comes, but I would probably do something, you know, fun like a tuna fish with then something like banana peppers on there, because I'm pretty straightforward most of the time, but there's a little bit of spice there. So I'd say something like that.
Nice. I would like to try a turkey sandwich with avocado and bacon. I love bacon and avocado. On rye, because rye is a unique, like a marbled rye.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting. I don't know if I'd want that named after me, but I think about it. All right, next one. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what do you think it would be?
You know, I lived in Taiwan for 2 years. I learned Chinese while I was there, and they always liked to call me Mr. Orangutan. And so because of the red hair, and they'd never seen red hair before. So I'm going to go with that. I think I'd come back as an orangutan, keep the hair color.
That's awesome. I like it. At least you took it in stride. I spent approximately 2 years in Canada. And one of my companions was a 6'7". And people used to laugh at us and point and call us Mutton Jeff. And so I was like, excuse me. Anyway, so at least you took it in stride. Last but certainly not least, what is your most treasured possession?
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of stuff, to be honest. So when I was thinking about this, I'd probably say my camping trailer, because that's where I've done a lot of fun things, especially with my kids and the boys. It's fun to get them out and get them away from the screen. So I'd probably say the camping trailer.
Nice. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of camping, much to my wife's dismay. She would rather go camping more often than I would.
Hard to call it camping with a queen-size bed and a shower, but true. That's my type of camping.
My idea would be to get a nice RV and go camping that way.
Yeah.
That way I can enjoy all the things. Enjoy the outdoors, but also be clean. I don't like being dirty. Like, that's not my idea of a good time. So before we go... where can my listeners find you?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on most of the social media platforms, but probably the easiest way to find me would be if you go to scalingforlawyers.com. That will take you to my Facebook group. It's where people who are looking for just kind of time freedom principles in their business. So scalingforlawyers.com, and then that'll touch you with my Facebook group, and then you can message me and stuff from there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I hope that my listeners were able to get some value out of what you provide. And I look forward to talking with you via Facebook and continuing growing. So have a good one, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Well, that was Chris Guyman. I'm so grateful that he agreed to come on and join and talk about how he's done what he did. It was truly amazing to be able to talk with him and see the growth that he did. So I would urge you to reach out to him. And if you have coaching questions, how to grow your, whether it be a law firm or other type of business, I'm sure he could be a valuable resource for you. So Also, don't forget to hit subscribe and like this channel if you're on YouTube, or give me 5 stars wherever you're getting this from podcast. It really does help, and I sincerely appreciate it. Until next time, make sure to grow your business tactically.